Why are moralism, mysticism, and speculation enemies of the Christian faith? Find out with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. It's written by regular guest Pastor Jonathan Fisk. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can pre-order Broken by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible.
You cannot follow three different religions at the same time, Pisin.
Why not?
Because believing in everything at the same time is the same as not believing in anything at all. Listen, instead of leaping from one religion to the next, why not start with reason? In a few hundred years, science has taken us farther in understanding the universe than the religion has in 10,000. I'd much rather have you believe in something I don't agree with than to accept everything blindly. And that begins with thinking rationally.
A little scene from the new movie, The Life of Pi. The father speaking to his young son wants to believe every religion is equally true. Does the father have a point? You can't believe that all of them are true. That's like believing nothing is true. But does it begin with thinking rationally? And is science the answer to that question? Religious pluralism is obviously one of the themes of this new movie, The Life of Pi. We'll talk about religious pluralism and The Life of Pi with Ken Samples here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. Greetings and welcome. This is Issues Etc. coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Ken Samples will be our guest to talk about religious pluralism. Chris Roseborough will join us after that. We'll spend the second part of this first hour talking about the 10th anniversary and the re-release of a 10th anniversary edition of the best-selling book, 60 Million Sold, The Purpose-Driven Life by Rick Warren. Hear a little bit from Rick Warren, why he's re-releasing the book as well. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse will kick off the second hour. We'll talk about a recommendation by the American Academy of Pediatricians to prescribe Plan B to teen girls, and then we'll round everything off today in the last hour of the program with Pastor Tom Baker, teaching a Sunday school lesson, The Birth of John the Baptist Foretold. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, and our Twitter address, @issuesetc. Ken Samples is a regular guest. He is scholar for Reasons to Believe, based in Pasadena, California, and he's author of the book, 7 Truths That Changed the World. Ken, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Good to be with you.
That little piece from the movie, The Life of Pi, that we heard the father says, in essence, look, son, you can't believe all religions are true. That's like believing nothing is true. Does the father in the movie have a point?
Well, I think he does. I think that, you know, it's often easy to kind of want all the religions to be true because we think, well, that would take all of the intolerance out of things. But when we begin to examine the religions, we look carefully at what they teach, what they say about the nature of God and human beings and salvation, we discover that it's difficult to believe all these things. It's kind of a cosmic madhouse. And but I also think it's interesting that the father said, well, just then opt for science. Of course, my response would be, but it's Christianity that birthed science. And so science doesn't have a secular roots, it has Christian roots.
So how would you modify what the father said? Because he essentially did just recommend, both parents in the movie recommend that the son settle on science because science has explained more than religion ever has. How would you modify the advice to that young religious pluralist?
Well, I would certainly agree that just adopting things without careful examination is just not going to work. You're going to end up with deep, deep problems. I think the question, though, would then be asked, if there is some guide, if there is a compass that one can follow, does that compass give us insight into the world, and you know, what does it have to say? Certainly science is a very powerful mechanism and one that we have come to rely on in many different ways. But again, I think it's very important to realize that science has deep religious roots, and in particular for Christianity. So I would say, if science is a valuable tool and it's birthed by Christianity, shouldn't historic Christianity be given consideration?
So introduce us, if you would. What can you tell us about the novel and this new movie, Life of Pi?
Well, of course, the book came out long before the movie, and it was an award-winning bestseller as a novel. And, of course, it really good books often make their way into films. And I think this film is going to do well. I think it's going to do well at the box office. And I think probably for many reasons, but one reason is, again, kind of tying this religious theme into it. And so, you know, the young boy in the film, he is Indian in orientation, and so his family kind of has a Hindu background, but he almost immediately begins to think that he can bring Christianity and Islam and Hinduism together. And so the film kind of unfolds with that basic idea in mind.
Now, this idea, at first glance, sounds like a good idea if one assumes that all religions are essentially the same. They have different features, maybe they have different perspectives, but they're all essentially the same. Can one even assume that?
Yeah, that's just a bad assumption. I mean, when you begin to look at the religions, immediately you begin to see the differences are profound. I mean, just think of God for a moment. Well, what is God? Is there one God? Well, you've got Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. But how about polytheism? Well, you've got a whole group of religions, Shintoism, etc. Is the universe God? Or Todd, even in the most original form of Buddhism, Theravada Buddhism, which was probably the Buddhist ideas that the Buddha adopted, they say there's no God at all. So how can you even deal with that issue? And if you develop it, is God personal? Well, again, Judaism and Islam say he is. Christianity says that God is more than personal, one God in three persons, the Trinity. But if you look at Hinduism and Buddhism, God is less than personal. And that's just one element we could talk about. What is the fundamental flaw with human beings? What is the solution to the flaw? What about various other issues? And so you cannot assume that these religions are saying the same thing.
So just a cursory examination of the most basic tenets of the major world religions, one that I guess we kind of put into the respectable religions, Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, Christianity, Judaism, reveals already that they are not the same. Even there's not even a common view of God or of man.
Yeah, that's right. I think a lot of people get confused, Todd, because there may be a broad commitment to something like the Ten Commandments, but even that kind of common ground is rooted in very different ways of looking at the nature of reality and the nature of God and the nature of human beings. And so even the common areas, you still end up with deep, deep disagreements about who is God and how do we have a relationship with him.
You say that the world's religions are irreducible. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that there's a strong sense by religious scholars who realize these religions can't all be true because they do teach very different things. Some people would suggest that maybe you need to kind of boil them all down. You need to reduce them to the lowest common denominator. And if you take that basic idea, then you get kind of a religious consensus that you can adopt. This was expressed in the thinking of John Hick, the former Christian. This thinking is often expressed by religious pluralists today. But the problem is there's no way of really boil them all down to the lowest common denominator. There's no fundamental common theme in which they all accept. And then even in your attempt to do that, you lose all the distinctive features of the religions that are attractive to people to begin with. And so And again, I can say that even the moral teachings that are somewhat similar, they still lead to different metaphysical views about the nature of God and reality.
Well, I heard an attempt at this recently, and that was, and I'd like you to respond to it with about a minute or so before our break. And that was, look, all religions come down to this: love God, love your neighbor. What's your response?
Well, I would say it would be nice if we could take that simply as, you know, direct teaching. But the problem is, who is God? What is God? What are human beings? And how do we go about loving and finding acceptance in all of this kind of context? And so I know people are very tempted to want to kind of push this idea because we get out of the intolerance and we move away from all the disagreements. But I think for any thinking person, this is simply not an option.
With about a minute here before our break, when we encounter this, we see those bumper stickers that say coexist with all the various religious symbols. I think the impulse is to say, shouldn't we all get along? Is there a grain of truth in that?
I certainly think that, Todd, we can look at these issues and we can say, look, I'm going to be tolerant to people. And I believe, as a Christian, people are made in the image of God. They have inherent dignity and value. I'm going to be tolerant toward people. But when it comes to ideas, and particularly ideas that contradict, I'm going to intentionally be intolerant of that idea. And I think Christians should both be tolerant of people, intolerant of bad ideas.
Ken Samples is our guest. We're talking about the new movie Life of Pi and religious pluralism on this Tuesday afternoon, November the 27th. I invite your questions or your comments. We're coming to you live, 1-877-623-MYIE. Talk back at issuesetc.org or send us a tweet at issuesetc. Ken Samples is scholar for Reasons to Believe, based in Pasadena, California, author of the book Seven Truths That Changed the World.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Issues, etc. What does this mean? We want to hear from you. Why do you listen? How has it helped you? What are your favorite topics? Who are your favorite guests? And what makes Issues, etc. unique? Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues, etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. Issues, etc. What does this mean? 618-223-8382.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Folks, there are 5 weeks left in 2012, and we're $63,000 short of making budget this year. Please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift to support this worldwide outreach. You can contribute by check, make your check payable to Issues, Etc., and send it to Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make an online donation at issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us at the end of 2012.
Those beautiful notes were just the beginning of We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God, Concordia Publishing House's debut CD collection from Pastor Stephen Starkey, one of the most significant Lutheran hymn writers of our time. For a limited time, save 10% when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran thought, Lutheran substance, Lutheran music, brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Ken Samples is our guest. We're talking about the new movie Life of Pi and its premise, religious pluralism. Here's the sticking point, and I think you pointed out in your reaction to The Life of Pi, and apart from all the other considerations that we might put together when comparing religion for religion and realizing that in many ways they contradict one another, for Christianity, and uniquely for Christianity, there is the issue of Jesus Christ himself. Why is that? Why must that be the central issue, not only for Christianity itself, but also for comparison to other religions?
Yeah, that's really the most important point. I mean, when we begin to look at the religions that have the most in common, Todd, you can look at Hinduism. Hinduism in its own religion, just staying in the Hindu faith, you can believe there are 330 million gods, or you can believe the universe is God, or you can believe that there's one God, and that's just in one religion. But moving closer to the religions that have more in common, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, so these three Middle Eastern monotheistic religions, they have a lot of common ground. There's a deep commitment to monotheism. But then right at the core of historic Christianity is the person of Jesus Christ. And all of the major branches of Christendom affirm that Jesus is God in human flesh. And so this doctrine of the incarnation, that Jesus was a single person and had both a divine and human natures, when we immediately introduce that idea and compare it to Judaism and Islam, there are contradictions. I mean, Islam says that Jesus was a man, he was a great prophet, he will make an appearance in the world before the world comes to an end. But there's one thing that is definitely true of Jesus. He's not God. And traditional Judaism says that Jesus does not have a divine nature. So even when we look at the religions that have some connection to the Middle East, to monotheism, all of the religions claim to be people of the book. Even there is this stark contrast when it comes to the person of Jesus Christ. And, of course, we could go on to compare Jesus to Muhammad. We can compare him to Krishna. We compare him to all of these different religious leaders. And there is this stark contrast in terms of identity.
Now, Christianity is not unique in its claim to be exclusive, that is, to be exclusively true. But it certainly does make that claim. In fact, Jesus himself makes the claim to be the way, the truth, and the life. Exclusively, no one comes to the Father except through me. And we should also point out, I mean, as I said, other religions, not all of them, but other religions do make similar claims to be exclusively true. Is that another problem with religious pluralism?
It is. I mean, there, again, some religions are much more inclusive, but there are times where the religions begin to be exclusive in nature. But none of them have this kind of idea that God has made an appearance into the world. I mean, even though forms of Hinduism will talk about gods appearing here and there, there is no fundamental idea like the incarnation. And so, you have those difficult issues. And so anybody who says, look, we can get away from all of this tension and division and intolerance by just adopting pluralism, I think it makes things much worse.
Why is this not the right answer? And it's commonly held up kind of alongside religious pluralism. I have my truth. You have your truth. What's true for you is true for you. And what's true for me is true for me.
Yeah, I think that's a very good description of parts of a worldview we call postmodernism. And so truth is purely a matter of taste. Truth is subjective rather than objective. I think, however, that when we again move to a biblical context, and we see the claims of Jesus Christ, he claims to be the way, the truth, and the life. Independent of whether you think that's true or you agree with it or you disagree with it, that is, it seems that the claims of Christ, when it comes into time and space and real history, those kind of subjective distinctions really don't have much weight and value at that point. Jesus, in fact, claims to be the truth. And so, again, it's a very different way of looking at these religious questions.
In the book and in the movie Life of Pi, is the question ever answered, the one that the father in the clip that we heard earlier on has an answer for, and that is, look, you can't believe it all, son. That's like believing nothing. And I take it that throughout the book and the movie, there is some attempt to reconcile these things. Is there ever an answer given to that?
I don't think so. In fact, I think part of the perceived appeal, Todd, is that this is part of that mysticism. It's kind of a game. It's a path that you have to walk down, but it's never ultimately kind of resolved. And of course, the context of the story about this young boy and being shipwrecked and kind of working his way through these kinds of issues, I think the appeal is that it's more about the journey. It's not about the destination, or it's not really about resolving the issue.
That ends up being pretty darn close to Buddhism. I mean, when it comes down to it, right living, the theology, we're kind of agnostic with regard to that. I mean, sooner or later, even a movie like The Life of Pi that purports to be about religious pluralism has to make some kind of choice, doesn't it?
I think it does, and I think that I think that that's a very powerful point. I think at some point you have to get practical about God. You have to really kind of begin to answer particular questions. Who am I, and what's my problem, and is there a God that I can really know? And if so, how? Which book should I read? I think there is a real time of practicality, and certainly one of those issues is we face death. Something's going to happen to us when we die. We're going to have to encounter some particular reality. And so I like to encourage people to put themselves in a condition where they can begin to try to take a stand on some of these issues.
How do you respond to someone who says, look, religion is what got us into this fix? I mean, the father in the movie put it this way by saying, science has taught us more about the nature of the universe and ourselves than religion has in 10,000 years. He's found, he thinks, a better way and a flaw with all the world's religions. And people say it's not worth it. I mean, these belief systems have done nothing but divided us. They should be obsolete. We should opt for pure rationality, pure science.
Well, there is difficulty with the religions. I mean, I'm certainly sympathetic to people who say, look, I'm confused. There are all of these people claiming to speak for God. Which voice, which book should I choose? I can certainly understand that, somebody would feel like these are difficult sorts of issues to deal with. I think, however, what I find very interesting is that Scripture has an answer for why people are religious. It's because they're made in the image of God, and even though they're fallen, they can't get away from this deep sense that they were made to have a relationship with God. I mean, even people who are not kind of formally religious, they seek after answers to life. They try to look up, what path should I follow? And so I think that maybe a good question would be, how does Christianity resolve this issue of the religions, and how does it explain where religions came from and how we sort through them? I think Christianity has a powerful answer to that. I think the other religions, far less so.
With only about a minute, what is that answer?
Well, I think that people are inherently religious because that's the way God made them. They have a deep need for God. I think of St. Augustine, you've made us for yourselves, and we'll have no rest and no peace until we make our peace with you. I think that the powerful answer, however, is that God has come to us in the person of Jesus Christ. As we look forward to the Advent season, the coming of God in time and space, in history, that's a very different way of thinking about God than you find in the other religions.
Folks, you can read an article that Ken Samples has written titled Profound Problems with Religious Pluralism at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Ken Samples is scholar for Reasons to Believe, based in Pasadena, California, and author of the book Seven Truths That Changed the World. Ken, thanks for being our guest.
Pleasure, Todd. Thanks again.
When we come back, I can't believe it's been 10 years, but I guess it has. Time flies. 10 years ago, this year, Rick Warren published a book that would go on to sell 60 million copies. Okay, in its category, best-selling book ever, in its category. And he's ready to re-release that book, The Purpose-Driven Life, for its 10th anniversary. A little punched up, a new edition for the next generation of people who will read The Purpose-Driven Life. Now, at the time, Rick Warren says the book's not about you. It's about God. And God's plan for your life. We'll pick up right there. Is that true of the best-selling book, The Purpose-Driven Life by Rick Warren? Chris Rosebro, host of the daily internet talk show called Fighting for the Faith, will be our guest. We're joined now by listener Rocky. Rocky, tell us about the tax benefits of donating stocks to Issues, etc.
What we discovered in talking with our tax people and our stock advisors is that it would be beneficial for us to be giving our charitable donations by this means, by giving stocks, which meant that we could give a stock and essentially say if you gave a $100 stock, it's straight money to whatever charitable organization you want to give. As opposed to cashing it out, we'd only be able to give whatever portion is left over after the tax consequences.
How would you advise our listeners if they're interested in donating stocks, bonds, or mutual funds?
They need to go and talk to their stockbroker or their tax person, and I think they'll find out it makes a heck of a lot of economic sense. And you're much better steward with your money, because what you're ending up doing is stretching the dollars that you're able to give donation-wise. And you're able to give a whole lot more directly to those people that you want to support. And you're able to preserve much more for yourself using the laws that have been provided for it.
Rocky, is there anything that we left out that you want to tell our listeners?
Well, the only thing that you've missed is that people really need to support Issues, etc. This is a terrific way to do it in a very economical way. It's a way to do it and be good stewards of the resources that God has blessed people with. And I would encourage everyone to support Issues, etc. in every possible way that they can. And if this is available to them, I'd encourage them to look into it, because it not only will help them, but it'll help Issues, etc. also.
To find out how to reduce your tax burden and support this worldwide outreach by donating stocks, bonds, or mutual funds, talk to your stockbroker or tax advisor, and then call Craig here at Lutheran Public Radio, 618-223-8385.
Delivering apologetics artillery right on target. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Those who promote abortion don't want to talk about late-term abortions. The media, pro-abortion activists, and Planned Parenthood know it's bad for business. Last year, a notorious late-term abortionist, Shelley Sella, in New Mexico, botched a late-term abortion by rupturing the woman's uterus. The 911 call was released, and you can hear someone from the abortion mill say the woman was 35 weeks along. Let that sink in. The woman would have given birth in about 3 weeks, but there she was having a legal abortion in the United States. The New Mexico Medical Board is planning to have a hearing only because she maimed the mother in the process, not because she killed the baby. How did we sink so low that this doesn't generate a total outcry by Americans?
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.